Hey gang, what's up? It's William here. I'm just leaving this preface to this episode. It's been a bit of a snake bit episode. Sammy was sick. He couldn't go, unfortunately. He was his throat got a little tender. He was taking it over the top. Another tri-state tournament. Yeah, he's the man that never sleeps when it comes to defending his hardware. So Mancunian gent James was kind enough to join me for the show this week. Some scheduling conflicts, everything was conspiring against us this week. And to top things off, our What Have You Been Watching segment somehow got lost into the electric ether. So you're going to hear us come straight into the our single review of a film, L'Attentat, a.k.a. Plot, a.k.a. The French Conspiracy, which I'll be synopsizing here, as you'll hear in a moment. So this episode's a little bit unconventional, but we did want to get something out for everyone to listen to. Hope you enjoy the episode. And, of course, thanks again to fellow gent James for throwing his Manchester Red hat in the ring to join me. All right, guys, hope you enjoy the episode. And we are back. We're going to take a trip to 1972 France, Yves Boisset. You picked this film. This sounds like it's right up both of our alleys. It's got an absolute dream team of a cast, which I'm sure we're going to get into here in a moment. I think it was a situation where we were tossing around a few things. Neither one of us had seen this, but it intended to, and this is how this kind of came to be, right? Am I correct?
Yeah. It's one of those films that I've had for a while. I acquired it from the place that shall not be named.
Yes.
With a handful of other films. Obviously, being a fan of the Eurocrime genre, I kind of wanted to branch out a bit more to the subgenre, if you will. Obviously, this doesn't quite fall under the Eurocrime umbrella. What it does, though, is, like we say, it has a stellar cast, and I kind of got into a rabbit hole of looking at certain actors' filmographies. And there was another one that I suggested to you called The Outside Man, which is more of an American-French kind of crossover.
Yeah,
it's just one of those films that's always piqued my interest. I mean, you know, The French Conspiracy, it's a great-sounding title. I think it goes by a few titles, but yeah, it was a good opportunity to get it watched. And obviously, with knowing your kind of film taste, I thought it might be one as well that you'd be up for watching. So I'm kind of glad that we got around to watching this and we can talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. Did you want to lead? Do you want me to lead?
You lead, man. Yeah.
Sure. So I'm going to run down the cast, because I think for people like us that listen to our show, it's really got, I mean, you could cut this cast in half and you would be just fine with, you know, the kind of the star power, the boners and the Zubaz. Jean-Louis Trintignant, who is one of the leads, Michel Piccoli, very much loved French actor, Jean Seberg, Bruno Cremer, you know, just a great kind of tough guy French actor, Philippe Noiré, who'd worked a lot in Italy and France, the mighty, the Americano in the film, Roy Scheider, and of course, one of our favorites, Jean-Maria Vellante. So, and plus, on top of all that, you get cameos from people like Nigel Davenport, and a few other faces. I can't remember the guy's name, like the arresting officer. I can't remember his name, but I've seen him in a lot of French films. He always plays kind of a, you know, an inspector behind a desk.
He's, what was his name?
He's usually got an amazing mustache, too.
It could be in my notes somewhere, but yeah, there's the cast is clearly one of the things that stood out to me. There's a nice little sorcerer crossover with Kramer and Roy Scheider.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I didn't even put two and two together.
There's a good rabbit hole, again, to use the term, getting into with the cast where, again, like Piccoli and Kramer, where I'm trying to rack my brains while I'm watching it. I've seen him in this, I've seen him in that, and there's the odd Belmondo film here and there.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's Piccoli's filmography is obscene. It's like 227 films or something like that, I think it is.
Yeah, he worked.
229 films. Yeah, and he's still working today. So, yeah, that goes to show that he loves his business.
And so is Yves Boisset.
Is he still working today?
Yeah, well, five years ago he was making films. He's still alive, so.
Right, okay. Crazy. It's interesting. He's a director that I've never really heard of before. I'll hold my hands up now that I'm not really that well versed on French films. I've obviously tried to watch a lot of the crime films like Le Samurai, The Cillian Clan, and the Belmondo film here and there, which are obviously, you know, a bit more of the slapstick, more of a serious Jackie Chan where he clearly does his own stunts, he hangs from helicopters and stuff like that. So it's been quite interesting to get into watching a film director that clearly is well-educated, very politically motivated, and has a voice in his films. Obviously, we'll get into him a bit more as we go along.
Yeah, he's a very interesting filmmaker. I've seen a handful of his films. Cran d'Arrêt, which means something stop. Safety Catch. Cremer as well. Adorf. It's a good one. It's a very good one. There's a really cool French film. Speaking of Adorf, you should check out Sommation, like sans sommation, I guess. I think the French, the English title is Without Warning, sans sommation. I don't know, something like that. Very cool. Very, very cool.
I mean, his film titles really stand out, actually, looking at them, like The Key is in the Door, The Common Man, Nothing to Report. So I get the feeling that the kind of crime conspiracies, his wheelhouse.
Oh, big time. Big time.
So, yeah, clearly based on this film, he's someone that I'm going to go back and find out a bit more of.
The Cop, another good one. Johnny Garco.
Okay.
Adolfo Celli, Serge Nubre. it's cool. And then, ironically, he did a couple. I think there was a couple of these films, Fayard films. They're like cop films. And well, an actor who I've come to really fall in love with, Patrick Dewaere, French actor, plays the titular Fayard. So, and of course, our man Marcel Bozzuffi is in it. So there's a lot. And then actually, the reason I mentioned Le Soir de l'Ange is good, another one of his. But ironically, we were doing a Boisset this week when we were supposed to do a Boisset of sorts this week. We were supposed to do The Running Man.
And
okay. Boisset directed Le Prix du Danger, which is The Price of Danger, or The Prize of Peril. It's the French riff on Running Man. It's like 1975? No, 80, I guess, 83. And it feels much more kind of, it's less cartoony than Running Man.
Okay.
But it's very cool. Again, Piccoli, Bruno Cremer, Gerard Lanvin, who's, you know, cool kind of French actor. And it's cool. It's, you know, very much kind of commentary on society and what we consume as entertainment and so forth. So
I'd be quite interested to see that, because obviously the story by Stephen King is it's the Bachman books, isn't it? The Running Man.
Yeah.
He wrote under the pseudonym, and it's a really serious, like you say, commentary on where he thought television was going at the time. So it'd be interesting to see a European take on it. I imagine it's a little less heavy on the having Mick Fleetwood cameos and the like.
Yeah, there's no opera singing heavies. And but to take it back, there's actually two. I fell down the Running Man rabbit hole because it blew my mind when I saw Le Prix du Déjeuner. Was the German one, which precedes that even by, I don't know, a decade. It's Das Millionspiel. So if you can fall down those, both of those are available if you're picking up and putting down. So you can check out both of those. They're pretty cool. But anyway, I digress. I'm kind of get away from the film that we're covering today, as we're known to do here. So yeah, I think, you know, you'd mentioned about the French films wanted to get into them, but they're a bit of a blind spot. I have often found, and I've said this on the show before, that French films, other than sort of the big hitters that would be sold internationally, I feel like France's output is kind of similar to me for Japan's output of the 70s and 80s, where a lot of it was lost to English-speaking audiences because those countries didn't really give a fuck if they were English-friendly releases or not. They were made for French or Japanese audiences, and they were fine with just keeping them domestic. You know, so I feel like there's just in this era of fan subbing, there's just a gold mine of films to catch up on.
I mean, I as soon as I was 10 minutes into the film, I quickly messaged you like, shit, this is half English, half subbed, half dubbed. So it was a bit all over the place. You can see that thankfully the powers that be have put a bit of a care into the film for us to watch. So it's one of those when you kind of get into the mindset of the fact you're going to have to listen to English and read subtitles every 5 or 10 minutes, it doesn't really bother you. So it's good that someone's gone to the effort to do that for us.
Yeah, people like us are, you know, yeah, we're willing to, like, our people in our community, you know, we're kind of used to watching work prints and kind of composite, you know, films put together and stuff like this, where it toggles between French and English or Italian and English or whatever else. So yeah, and we should say too, we've mentioned, you know, the director, we mentioned the cast, but Ennio Morricone did the score for this film.
Yeah, that was one of my notes. I may as well go to it now. That it's a really swelling, foreboding soundtrack. And as I was kind of watching it, because I went into it blind, I didn't have a laptop open, I didn't have IMDb or anything like that. I was just thinking to myself, like, this would be a film that Morricone had scored perfectly. And then, lo and behold, it is Morricone. So it kind of goes to show that we know him from all his Italian films and the odd American film here and there. But he actually did quite a lot of French cinema as well, with one of the most famous ones being Fear Over the City, the Belmondo film. So he kind of keeps in the same kind of musical theme throughout his French films, I've noticed. But it suits the film very, very well.
It does. I would say it's, if anything, it might even be a little bit underused, I feel like. When you have Morricone scoring your film, I mean, milk that cow. But but the stuff that they use is very timely. It enhances the kind of anxiety of the scenes. This feels a little bit like, a little bit like a Damiani kind of paranoid political thriller.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and you get a lot of that. Like, it's curious to me that we saw so many. And, you know, I have to believe that Trintignant, I've always said his name that way. I don't know if that's right or not, but his name's always one that I feel foolish kind of saying aloud. But
yeah, it's you don't know if this G's silent. I was going to pronounce it Trintignant. So yeah,
Trintignant,
it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, Trintignant's probably, yeah, that sounds more accurate, I would say. But I get the sense he might very well be political because, you know, he's done stuff like The Conformist, and he was in Z, which, you know, again, French-Greek co-production, which I think is, for my money, probably the high watermark of the kind of political thrillers from Europe.
Right, right.
Which, you know, I know is high praise, but I consider Z to be a masterwork. I mean, it's like 9.5 territory for me.
Right, right. Excellent. So,
but yeah, I mean, and then Volante we knew was very political. You know, he was involved with the Communist Party in Italy, and I have to say, seeing those two on screen together for the first time, it's like one of those things when you get, you know, two actors you really love, it becomes like the mega powers running to the ring together.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. Very exciting. Everything good over there?
Yeah. Yeah, please just carry on talking. There seems to be a tiny insane person shouting. So please just carry on talking.
I will keep talking, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I think, you know, Trintignant or however James had said it, and Vellante together on screen, really exciting stuff to see. The film feels to me to be, you know, quite well shot. I like the mix of handheld stuff where there's some riot footage and protest footage, which, you know, it kind of blurs the line, like when you get something like Medium Cool, the Wexler film, which also looks at, you know, the riots and stuff, and that stuff is all shot handheld and was a real political rallies and whatnot. But the way we get the handheld camera stuff feels very intimate and immediate and very sort of, you know, 6 o'clock news documentary style. And you combine it with some of the cinematography, the language of paranoid films of the time, when you get a lot of kind of overhead shots of people walking in town squares and, you know, kind of that Big Brother's watching all the time or someone's watching all the time. And I quite like that mixture with the cinematography. I think it works quite well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tumultuous time. I mean, you know, the 60s and 70s made for great decades artistically, but I think it has to do with some of the, a lot of the upheaval going on in the world, right? I mean, we saw it in our nightly news, and there just seemed to be trouble everywhere, whether it was, you know, France or England or Africa or... I mean, there always is, inevitably, but it just... It feels like people were more... were less apathetic than they are now. They hadn't been lulled, you know, as much. It seemed to be that then there was more commentary through high art in film.
Absolutely. I mean, we're kind of blessed as film fans is the wrong term to use, that most political rallies and big events throughout the time pretty much ended in violence, which obviously makes for, you know, great plot for films, etc. As you can see, that what seemed like a peaceful protest just ended up with cops just plowing in, beating, tear gas, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. It was a very scary time, I imagine, to be a youth in the 70s, where you're kind of, if you go to university, you're obviously going to get stuck in the trap of having a voice and being quite political in that frame of mind. And I think that's what we get carried over by Darian, the character, where he's a man who's kind of stuck on his morals, where you get the feeling that he wants to kind of drop this life behind, yet he almost gets pulled back into it based on information that the government has on him from his kind of sketchy past.
Yeah, you do. You definitely do. But yeah, it's curious to me that so many of these films were made, it seems like, in the 70s, but nowadays it's like just you rarely get them anymore. I love when you get films like this where you know we're in a very shadowy world, and you know they good use of literal shadows, but just as well just sort of shadowy, who can be trusted, who can't, who's got what motivations. That can be difficult to clearly outline in a film, especially because you're trying to not show your hand completely, but you're trying to get your viewer to play the kind of the guessing game. And I think they do a good job of that. And I think as a North American, I'm always very fascinated by the sort of paranoid political thrillers in Europe, because I feel like the line between allegiances and alliances, the line is blurred much more because of the proximity of countries in Europe and the interests being different than sort of America. And, you know, it makes for sometimes a little more guessing, I guess.
I mean, I should say off the bat, really, that I'm not overly politically savvy, to use a term.
Nor am I.
But I think what the film does, and it's interesting to go back to how I think the French Conspiracy is the American title, but the English title is actually called Plot, which goes some way to explain in the film that it's all centered around high-level clandestine government goings-on. But what the film does is it gives a good understanding of what's going on, even though you've kind of got a revolving door of characters who come and go, and you're kind of wondering who this guy was and what his place in it was. But the main central core of the cast does a really good job of getting the plot across in quite an easy manner. I, w- I wasn't quite expecting the film to play out like this. I was expecting more of an upbeat, you know, shady people hiding around corners political thriller, more than a, you know, so driven as it is, to be honest.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. One of the things I like, that guy's name I was thinking of was Jean Buis, or Buis, Jean okay. Buis. So I coincidentally saw his face pop up through something else I had open. Darren is the Jean-Louis character, and I like that he plays this kind of uncorruptible, kind of thinking man's everyman, kind of a lovable, I don't want to say a lovable misanthrope, but he seems to be very fed up with humanity, and he finds a lot of things very tedious. It's the kind of role, you know, a 70s Dustin Hoffman or someone would have played, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, really good stuff from him. Yeah, we mentioned that. Where are these films now? What else do we got here? I like, too, just, you know, seeing the shades of gray and trying to figure out people's end game and how we as the viewer are kind of navigating these waters alongside Darren, Jean-Louis' character. And it's handled quite well. I mean, I feel like the script had to have been written by someone who is politically minded. It feels like there's too much specific, without being preachy, but specific kind of commentary on global affairs that doesn't fall into the trap of just sort of blanket statements about the world. Do you know what I mean? Sure. It feels like it comes from someone who knows their stuff. At least to me, who doesn't know his stuff very well. So
I think one of the film's plus points is kind of harking back to the American thriller, is that we're figuring out the film along the same time as Darian.
Correct.
As soon as he's figuring out, we're figuring it out at the same time. Whereas what I'd imagine an American film would be is that we go to a cut scene where we see all the kind of nasty goings on. So we kind of, you know, you kind of foreshadow it before your kind of anti-hero, which is pretty much what he is in the film. So you're piecing it together at the same time as he is, which he plays really well. I also get the feeling that he's quite torn on his morals. As I said before, you kind of get the feeling that he wants to just get on with his life. He doesn't want to be involved in all these political rallies, etc. Obviously, he's got that past that pulls him back in that can be used against him.
And I think, too, he's very much a realist at this point. He's probably felt like he's not going to get caught like that rat in that maze where he knows there's really only one outcome and sure, it's not going to benefit him. So he just wants to almost keep his head down and just do what he has to do. You know, it's kind of what it feels like.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seemed like a dog eat dog time. So
big time, yeah.
He has no qualms in leaving his partner, girlfriend behind to better himself, and you know, in this case, maybe to just stay alive.
Interesting, this film I was just looking at. It was inspired by the assassination of Mehdi Ben Barka, who was a Moroccan politician and very ahead of the left-wing National Union of Popular Forces. So, and he disappeared in Paris in 1965.
Well, right.
And as of 2009, the investigations are still ongoing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that is. that goes to show you know, how muddy the water is when you're dealing with stuff like this, right? You know, this was almost like Bosse's JFK in some ways, right? Like, it's kind of a lot of shadowy people. And I like, too, how it looks at the government controlling media, you know, the consumption of media and how the society consumes it, how it's guided by the government. I like that. You know, there's some talk of Black Panthers, you know, interesting stuff. I like the color palette for this film. It suits it well, kind of very drab grays and dark blues and kind of steely. There isn't a lot of splashes of colors, but it's you know, it's a serious minded film, you know, so I think it serves itself.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a note of mine. And that's one of the things I enjoy about, European thrillers specifically. American ones kind of take it on as well, but I always find that American thrillers kind of add that romantic spin to it, whereas this is more grounded in reality. It's very, it's always wet, it's always raining, it always looks like it's on the cusp of going dark. It's clearly set around January, February time or late autumn. It kind of gives a really good feel to the film. I can't really comment on how well the film was shot with it being such a... It wasn't a crappy print. It was an okay print.
Yes.
But it did the job of getting a point, getting across the point of a very bleak and uncertain setting.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, too. I love sort of European films set in late fall, winter, or early spring, like this sort of time of year reminds me of Tony Arzenta, big.
Yeah, absolutely.
No leaves on the trees. It's fucking gray every day, which again, that I think enhances the film is gray. It's not black and white. It's very gray. So the time of year serves it well. And I like too that, I don't always quite know what's going on, which I think is by design, because we're playing along with Darien, François Darien, Jean-Louis Trintignant's character. But I like when films have enough faith in their audience to say, keep up with me.
Yeah.
And they may not give you what you needed in the beginning until the end, but then the pieces all fit.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I like that.
It's as I said before that... If it was American, it'd be completely different. It wouldn't be anywhere near being the same film. But I'm kind of glad this is one of the first kind of political, like really heavy political thrillers I've really ever watched. And as I was 5 minutes in, even after 5 minutes, I was feeling a bit like, oh, I'm not too sure about this. Obviously, when they're talking about the characters and how Sadil is a main target and how he has to be brought down. It all went a bit over my head from the get-go, but it kind of flows really well where it branches out and you can quite understand. And 15 minutes in, you're like, ah, right, okay, half an hour, and you're like, right, I get it now. So it's directing in such a way that it kind of gives you a lot to chew on at the start, but ends up breaking it down into bite-sized pieces as the film goes on.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, have you seen Z yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dude, man, you gotta see Z.
There's a lot. I mean, I could send you a snapshot of my to watch list from my iPhone list now, and it's as long as anything I could possibly tell you. There's so many films on there. Like, I've still not seen The Battle of Algiers and Rome, Open City, and all these.
Oh,
kind of
man, yeah, those are two
Italian films,
favorites
so.
Of mine. Just favorites, and this, Algiers a little bit. Not that this feels similar, but I couldn't help but think of Algiers being a French politically minded film about the, the Algerian struggle within the country. But I'll tell you what, move it up the list.
Okay.
It's like, I can't tell you enough how much I love that film. It's got an amazing propulsive soundtrack or the score. It feels very Greek, but it feels very like Eurocrimey. It's so fucking good. The film itself is so... I saw it for the first time maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It just sticks with me, man. It's such a tremendous film. Such a tremendous film. Just move it up your list. I would love to hear your thoughts on it when you do get around to it, because this is a good film. Z is a fucking great, great film.
Cool, so, man. Yeah, I'm just adding it to the list now.
Again, same sort of thing. Keep up with me. But I think you're also, with Kostas Gavras, you're in, I wouldn't say more capable hands, but there's a little more clarity, it seems like.
Okay.
It doesn't feel quite as foggy. I'll jump around here. Jean Seberg, what she always reminds me of is Mia Farrow.
Yeah, I was trying to pinpoint who, there was someone at the back of my mind, and it could well be Mia Farrow, it could be someone else, but she had that late 60s, early 70s look of, I think it was the look of the time. But yeah, Mia Farrow could be the person that I was thinking of.
A little bit Mia Farrow and a little bit, who was Rossellini's wife? Bergman. A little bit Ingrid Bergman, I think, is who I'm thinking of. But Yeah, she's fine. I mean, this is very much a guy's film, right?
It is. I've watched.
Is it Jean Seberg? I just realized she's American. Yeah. Even though I've seen Breathless, that's Jean Seberg. It's late.
I've watched quite a few of political thrillers with my wife, like The Marathon Man.
Which I've never seen. I've never seen Marathon Man.
Move that to the top of your list as well.
Okay, it's a deal. It's a deal.
We'll do a swap deal. And, you know, she commentated at the time. It's like, why do they always have to have bleak endings? This wouldn't be in her comfort zone of watching at all. I don't think it without sounding, you know, horrible. It does feel like a man's film almost.
Yeah.
You know, there's one female cast member in it completely. It's very centered around, like I said, the high end. Well, it was of the time, really. It was when you think of government goings on, it'd be a very male populated way of working. So
a boys club. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it was anything towards women. It was just, you know, it was what it was at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. I love the line Switzerland, where planes and trains are always on time and nobody's starving. I think, Jean-Marie Volante says that, which is ironic when they're talking about sort of Switzerland and corruption, because ironically, the dude that Darien goes to see that was shooting the clay pigeons looked to me like a younger Sepp Blatter.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah.
It's kind of ironic. It's great we get to see Darien decides to rock the Steve McQueen bullet holster, and someone even calls him out for it. They're like, that's so impractical. You should wear that on your hip.
I don't recall that bit, actually. That's like I said, I watched this over two nights, and as I was saying in the message, that I kind of wish I'd have gone back and watched a lot of it from the start again. So that bit must have just evaded me. Sorry about that.
No, it was a minor thing. The one younger guy that Darien goes to see, it looks like he's wearing granddad's shearling jacket. It's way too big for him. I think it was a college student.
Yeah, he was Sadil's kind of protege, almost.
Yes, that's right.
And again, he knew or had an inkling from the start that Darien wasn't quite who he was portraying himself out to be.
Yeah.
Maybe he had that kind of young head on his shoulders where he can kind of see through the game that's being played almost. And obviously his time on screen comes to quite an abrupt end because of this. But again, that goes to show almost how Darien's changed from being the romantic political activist writing papers for his newspaper to hanging out with the high end government officials who are, you know, clay pigeon shooting and having all these soirees where they're drinking champagne and eating caviar, where he's kind of stuck between that rut and a hard place of having to cover his own back almost to stay alive and just appease the powers that be.
He becomes a cynical kind of realist, yeah, and it's just, he's resigned to that. The poster for this, if you look up the title L'Attentat, like the French title, it looks almost like a Polish movie poster. It's really cool.
Yeah, with all the kind of head profiles.
No. It's got like a hand-drawn, like two faces wearing sunglasses with like a hat on and a trench coat. It's just like a heads up, like from like the neck up profile. It's really, really cool. But what other notes do I have here? A lot of serious faces in this. There's no smiling. There's no smiling in this.
There is no smiling whatsoever. It's a very, very serious film.
A couple dudes in this, they wear sweaters and blazers. Man, that would be all I could think of when they sat down at the diner was how fucking bulky would it be when you bent your arms wearing a sweater under your blazer?
I find it hard enough with just a shirt under a blazer, let alone a sweater.
Oh, terrible. Terrible. We get to see that some Hare Krishnas pop up in this, which is amazing. I think one kind of minor gripe I have is I feel like the film doesn't feel to me like a vice being tightened. I feel like the film feels a bit casual with its stakes. It doesn't get ratcheted up a lot as it goes on for me. But there's a lot of information and players involved. And now that we know it's dealing with a legitimate case, they're trying to get a lot of information out there. This is like that one Sammy and I did a few weeks ago, Bankers of God or The Banker of God or whatever.
Okay.
That the Railroad put out, that whole scandal, which is pretty good.
What else? I mean, I've got to know this pretty much exactly the same as that, that it's very, very low on action. Again, just comparing it to the American films, that they have these big set pieces where your anti-hero's in peril.
Shootout, like, or something. Or
yeah, like the parallax view where you've got the start on the Sky Needle. And
oh, yeah, fist fight in the saloon.
Yeah, exactly. What this kind of does is there is minor action. It's very slow and procedural. The odd car tail here and there where the Marconi score kicks in, but all the suspense is centered around the game that's being played. We don't have any jumping off towers and running down streets. It's all play by play almost. That's definitely the feel that I got from it. And nothing quite says conspiracy thriller like an underground car park meet, should I say, which was in there. So they were sort of bang off the checklist.
Totally. And some of the aerial shots, I don't know if you were on the air or not when I said that, but some of that aerial stuff you get of your central character walking through like a town square feels very like it's one of the prerequisite shots for the paranoid thriller.
Yeah, absolutely.
The one heavy looked like Paul Schaefer to me from David Letterman's band. He even had like the sunglasses on. One of the things they do that kind of completely goes against type here is Volante is handcuffed to like a hot water pipe, you know, when they do the overhead handcuffing someone. But he had his shirt on. That's probably the first time in history of cinema that the dude's had his shirt on when he's being tortured, when he's handcuffed. I love seeing the squalor of the shanty town, which kind of shows up towards the back end of the film. It just makes it very cinematic. Michel Darien, Jean-Louis' character, he fucking loves Bonanza. He's got a Bonanza poster in his studio, man.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He's got a keen eye.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's got this Bonanza poster. It's like, it just sticks out like a sore thumb. It's like a happy-go-lucky kind of American Western TV show. And he's this kind of cynical, you know, jaded, politically active dude. Maybe that's his escapism.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, another prerequisite shot, I think we get it in this, is when they're playing the tape reels and the camera will slowly pull into the reel playing as the audio is going.
Yeah, yeah.
Get that. And then just, you know, the end, it is cynical, certainly. But I think that's earned. And I think these times warranted that. So, yeah, I'll yawn and then I'll kick it over to you.
Well, yeah, we've covered most of my notes, really. Going back to Darien's character, how his kind of fate is sealed at the end. He kind of has his change of heart where, you know, he realizes the world that he's gotten into. He doesn't like the people he's dealing with. He doesn't like the lifestyle they're leading. At the heart, he is a political voice through his newspaper, and he feels like he has turned on his morals. And the woman that I don't know if he loved, but clearly trusted. And he has the kind of romantic falling on his own sword towards the end. Every kind of cutscene that we get when we're dealing with it, especially in the minor characters, is that there always seems to be some kind of political black spot. There's a scene with the arresting officers in a cafe where it's completely irrelevant to the plot, but they're just talking about how their police chief has almost a brass neck on him for dealing with corruption when he's involved in hiding Nazi documents of some ilk. I don't know if you remember that. So just kind of littered throughout the film, there's all these just like nods to, you know, it's all shady from the
everyone's
top to the bottom.
Hands are fucking dirty if you're in this game.
Again, just going back to the score, it's something that I feel that Michael Small borrowed from to do the Parallax View, and I think he did Marathon Man and Clute. I might be wrong on that, but the kind of just slow swelling. Obviously, Michael Small adds that bit more of a Hollywood shine to the music, but it's definitely, I would have liked to have heard something throughout the film a bit more. It was, in fact, I don't recall hearing the soundtrack an awful lot throughout the film. It was,
that's what I'm just saying, too spare.
Yeah, exactly. Low in action, it's very slow and procedural. The Volante character, always Sadil, he always cuts quite an imposing and menacing. He never smiles, he's always straight and stony-faced, and you're always kind of waiting for the moment where he's going to stick our twist. He seems to be quite calculated in his decisions. Yeah, he eventually, you know, gets caught up, and the plan almost, well, effectively goes ahead. Bosset, he seems like he really has an agenda in this film. Like he's either pissed off or he's got a message that he wants to purvey. And he's a director that I'd like to know more of outside of film. He obviously has an extensive filmography where he deals with the same kind of subject matter throughout, but I'd like to know about him more as a person, about his education, and he's obviously politically minded. So how this transposes into his films. He seems like a really, really interesting character. What action that we have is always just short and to the point. Like the chase that we have through the shanty town is no more than a 2 minute, there's nothing much there. What else have we got? Yeah, notes are pretty much covered, really. The girlfriend clearly sees the passion for attending the rallies and having a voice and being political. Almost, it's died within the Darian character. She just sees him as almost like a cog in the machine as he's going on. She seems surprised that he's working for the government in such a way and how it's affecting their relationship and his general behaviour. He obviously, towards the end, as we've discussed, goes back on this and sees the mistake that he's made. But obviously, as we sometimes find in these films, that there is no real way out. There's only one way out.
Yeah, exactly. Sadly.
But like I said, it's not the film I was expecting at all, but what it did give me was almost an education on political-minded thrillers. I've never really seen that many European ones. The American ones are always a bit more digestible and quick and to the point. And you've recommended some films that are definitely going high on my to-watch list because as I was 10 minutes into this film, I was umming and ahhing whether it's going to be the film that I quite sold to you and if it was going to be quite a film that the listeners had want to watch, but I really think it is. I think it's 2 hours long. It doesn't quite outstay its welcome. Maybe 15 minutes or so of exposition could have been shaved off, but I can't complain. I think I got an hour 45 in before I thought I'm going to have to go to bed. But at that point, I really should have just finished it because even at 2 hours, it does flow very, very smoothly, even with the kind of dialogue and subtitles problem, which doesn't end up being a problem at all, really, because when Roy Scheider comes into it, he's speaking English anyway. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Nice. Make or break scene, I would have to say, I don't feel like there's like a crown jewel scene in this. I think it's a lot of intimate scenes. So for me, just kind of the cinephile in me, seeing Roy Scheider, Jean-Louis Trintignant, and Jean-Maria Volante all at the same fucking dinner table. You know, I thought that was...
I'm going to pick exactly the same. It's obviously writing down a score and MVP. I just couldn't put my finger on anything, really. There's nothing that really stands out and hits you in the face as going, this is the scene, because there isn't anything like that in the film. It's just finding that little nuance within the film that kind of makes you go, ah, this is it. And clearly when all the faces are on screen at once, it's a sight to behold.
Totally is. MVT, I'm going to say... Gosh. You know what? I'm gonna go with Jean-Louis, man, because you know he's an actor that when I talk about my all-time favorites, I don't mention him. I don't think of him, but I've never seen him shit the bed. I think
No.
he always brings a complexity to his performances that I really admire. And we see it again here. I think the way his character is written, he could have been, not to say unlikable, if you're rooting for someone else, but he is very much an atypical kind of or an anti-hero. He just, you know, but I think I'm going to give it to him, even though I could give it to the whole cast or Boisset or, you know, its message, certainly, but I'm going to go with Jean-Louis. My score for the film, I'm going to say an 8 out of 10. It's a solid, solid film. Like I said, it doesn't quite overstay its welcome. It could probably have about 50 minutes trimmed. It's more substance than style, but that's fine sometimes, certainly.
Absolutely, yeah. MVT, I'm going to go with the same. Again, when you kind of look over Trunnion's filmography, I don't quite give him the recognition that he sometimes deserves. I mean, The Great Silence, which we all love and adore. There's Me Tu Ne Seras Senna, which I know Morricone did the soundtrack for. The Conformist, So Sweet, So Perverse, the Lenzi film. His filmography as a genre film fan's superb.
Oh
And I've
man.
never really, hold him in high regard when you're talking about your Franco Neros
He's up there,
and
man.
Belmondos. Yeah, he really is.
In fact, he might have a better filmography than any of those guys. If we're going to talk about real classy heavy hitters like the Conformist and Greats, I mean, he might have the best filmography of those guys.
I mean, obviously, getting into later life, he has progressed as an actor. Getting into the Three Colors trilogy and the Haneke film he did a couple of years ago.
Amour, or Love,
That's the
yeah,
one.
that's a really good film.
So
Fuck, he was in
he's.
Il Sorpasso, man. I mean, he's a quality direct actor.
Yeah. So for me, I'll put him up there. He doesn't come across as a tough guy, so he's not
No.
in that European tough guy wheelhouse. He's a very kind of classy guy. He seems like a well-trained actor, with your kind of everyday looking face. He doesn't seem to stand out, and I think that's one of one of his best features is that he's quietly brilliant at what he does. So yeah, he's definitely the standout for me. As for a score, I'm going to go for 7.5.
Very fair. I was at 7.75 till we were talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, I've enjoyed it a lot more than I initially through my notes have done. I suppose that's always the kind of thing when you kind of shoot the shit with a film and you're reminded of the little things that you may or may not have missed. It, like I said, it wasn't the film I was expecting it to be, but it turned out to be a better film in a roundabout way. Clearly, I was expecting, bombastic music and car chases and like seedy alleyway chases and things like that. But it's not that kind of film, and it seems that Boisson isn't that kind of filmmaker. So maybe if I go and visit The Outside Man, the kind of American French crossover, it might be different having the American influence, but it was definitely serviceable, and I definitely recommend it to the listeners. It might not be everyone's cup of tea, but for those who fancy something a bit more on the serious side, it's definitely a good watch.
French filmmakers, I've learned over the time, and even the 60s, you know, one of the things I've found and I appreciate with French filmmakers is they're going to make films on their terms, their way. You
Yeah,
either like it or
absolutely.
you don't. So whether it's Boisset, whether it's, Louis Malle, Claude Chabrol, any of these guys, they're going to make their film. You may not like it, but they made it their way, and I admire that, and we did that with
Exactly, and
Boisset.
we're clearly spoiled as film fans these days, and to have a director who does things his way, we should be grateful for that, really, because there's clearly wouldn't be any studio interference that makes the film into something it's not. It's true as his words. So yeah, I can't fault that at all.
What I would say, you know, while we're swooning, sitting at our desks looking at Hunky Nero, Jean-Louis is in the back of the classroom writing his paper for the school newspaper. Kind of what he is. Well, I would advise you too, just to get on the French train, you know. Oh, another thing too. Have you ever seen Malevol with Trintignant? It's like a post-apocalyptic film.
No.
But in a very different way. It's really cool. We covered it on the show years ago. It's fucking awesome.
I think I remember. Yeah, I remember you covering it. But it, again, it's just one of those films that it's not quite at the top of your list. So obviously, as years go by, your list gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and things get pushed down. So I'll check that out.
If you're feeling the Trintignant and you want to get into something a little bit different, and you want to see French post-apocalypse that doesn't feature shoulder pads and all the things we love, but it's still, you know, very cool. That's one. And check out the films of Bertrand Blier.
Okay.
If you get a chance. He's a guy that I've been dabbling in over the past year, and I quite like. I went on a bit of a run with him the past even month or so. Bertrand Blier, very cool. But we can bang back and forth off the air.
Absolutely.
About this stuff. Max and the Junkmen's another cool 70s, or is it 60s, kind of French, kind of noir-y. Heisty film that Kim Ji-woon was going to remake. It they talked about for years, but
right.
I'm rambling now, and we both got to get going. well, thanks so much for this, man. It's always, always, always a treat to be able to talk film with you.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. It's a shame Sammy couldn't be here, but needs must. These things happen. So I was more than happy to step in for you, and we got there eventually.
We did, man. It's he's got to get some honey and some, as the Italians say, gagomila, tea down, and. Be feeling better. So Samuel and I will be back next week. We're going to do a big, a lengthy, girthy Olive show. It's going to be a 4-film show. So wow. In addition to Teachers and The Running Man, we're going to be doing The Quiet Gun and Coolie High, one we both love that we are finally going to get around to talking about. So
are you actually doing the French version of The Running Man next week?
We're not. We're doing the Arnie version, but it was just funny that we're doing the Arnie version, considering there was
brilliant,
the tie. Yeah,
even better. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, so it's cool, very cool.
Get your quotes at the ready because that one should be quite fun.
Yeah, totally, man.
Have you seen just to go off topic a bit? Have you? I think someone posted on the group a couple of days ago. It's called Popcorn Muncher, and basically it's an online quiz game where you can pick a film from any kind of decade. Obviously it's not like an IMDb database of films. It's quite limited, but you can pick a decade, say like the 80s or whatnot, and you can either do a short quiz or a full quiz. I think the full quiz is like 20 questions, and like The Commando, Running Man, things are on there. So it's like, I'll try my hand. I got 100% at Commando, and I think I fell short on The Running Man just a bit, but man, it's such a time waster. If you ever like a loose end at work or something like that, and you want something, it's Popcorn Muncher, and
right.
Yeah, just to go back to The Running Man, it was I was quite appalled at some of the questions I got wrong on it.
So which I feel like, of for me, like Predator, Commando, and Running Man, I feel like Running Man gets, not to say it's ignored, but I feel like out of those three it gets ignored the most.
Yeah, I think it does. I don't know why.
It's tremendous. It's
a great film, but I mean, Commando's Commando. I mean,
Commando's.
I know your opinions on it, and mine are very much the same. But yeah, it's and I think Total Recall to a lesser extent as well. It's one of those films that it's Total Recall is a very, very, very good film.
It
but
is. I think it totally goes. Is.
Because it's got the kind of one-liner quips, and it's Arnie being muscly and action-y, people just kind of go, pah! It's one of those films. But nah, they really do it for me a lot. And if you kind of see past the kind of 80s muscly action star aesthetic, it's a really good film.
Yeah, totally, man.
Anyway, we've got hours to talk about this. I need to get the tiny insane person ready.
Yes, you do, and I need to sleep for a few hours before my...
We'll go pump an iron.
Yeah, I gotta pump the iron. I gotta get up with the Cult of Muscle Boys and work the glutes and all that good stuff. So it's truly been a slice. And with that being said, this has been the big show, and there's one thing left to say.
Adios.
Adios.